Around Comics, episode 42. Thank you for listening to another episode of Around Comics. This is Sal, and I am joined, as always... Oh, wait a minute. No, I'm not. I'm all by myself today. Chris and Tom have the week off. It's just me. So I bet you're wondering, I bet you're sitting there thinking, what does old Uncle Sal have in store for us today? Well, Chris and I were able to sit down a little while ago with a very talented writer, one of our favorites, Ed Brubaker. Writer of Captain America and Daredevil and the new creator-owned series Criminal, as well as a bunch of other stuff that we really enjoy. That'll be in just a moment, but let's get to a few show announcements. First off, this episode is sponsored by GeekArmor.com. GeekArmor.com sells t-shirts with the geek in mind, featuring a great selection of comic book t-shirts as well as video games, sci-fi, TV, and movie shirts. You are sure to find something you like. Check out their latest original design, a red shirt with a phaser hole on the front that reads, "I went on an away mission and all I got was this lousy t-shirt." And now the good folks at GeekArmor.com are offering a 10% discount to all Around Comics listeners. Just use the coupon code AROUNDCOMICS when placing your order and receive an additional 10% off. GeekArmor.com, check them out today. All right, so that's that. We paid the bills. What's next? Right Times Comic. Our July-August contest is Right Times Comic. Basically, we've taken a page out of a Green Lantern number 6. We've taken all the letters out of the word balloons, and you have to fill them all in. Whoever wins, Tom will choose a winner on that, and whoever wins will be sent a free trade of their choice, $24.95 or less, as well as 10... hand-selected quarter books by Mr. Tom Caters himself. So go to our website, www.aroundcomics.com/contests, and you will see all the information there. LCS Challenge. We have a LCS Challenge. If anyone wants to download our PDF flyer of the Around Comics podcast and talk to their LCS manager or store owner, get them to put the flyer up in your store, let us know. We will mention it on the show as well as put a link on the website. iTunes reviews, we're always asking for those. Chris is a real big fan of the iTunes reviews, and you'll be all happy to know that we finally did get to 40, so maybe he'll calm down, including a very nice review by one of our favorite creators, Andy Parks. We'd like to say thank you, Andy, for that. We know you're a listener, and we appreciate it. And if anyone has not checked out Andy's podcast, or a podcast that he works on from time to time, it's called Will Flipson, and you can check that out at willflipson.com/wordpress. So thanks again, Andy, and keep up the good work. Listener emails, send us your emails at news or info or pretty much anything at aroundcomics.com, and we'll read them on the show. Send us a voicemail. You can leave us a message at 1-888-65-GCAST. That information is also on the website, and we'll probably play it on the show. And I want to mention one last thing about the website. We have a new little thing we set up called a Frapper, which is basically a map where you can go and log in and put your zip code, and it'll give you a little icon on the map so we know where everybody's at. So you can check that out from our website under the community menu, or you can go to frapper.com/aroundcomics and do that. So that is that. Let's get on to the actual show. Like I said earlier, Chris and I had an opportunity to sit down with one of our favorite creators, one of our favorite writers, Ed Brubaker. Those of you that may not know who Ed Brubaker is, which I doubt, there's many, but just in case, he is the writer of Daredevil, Captain America, Uncanny X-Men. He came from the independent world of comics with such titles as Lowlife, and then he moved on to Gotham Central with DC. He did a great book called Sleeper, and he's just grown and grown and grown and just become a phenomenal writer. So we were very happy to sit down and talk with Ed for a little while. So without further ado, let's listen into that.
Have you guys all checked out the video on my MySpace page?
No. What is it?
Some friends of mine a good friend of mine who's like an ex-professional wrestler from Incredibly Strange Wrestling and my wife got together to make a little commercial for a criminal that's a parody of the Comics Foundry blog from last week where he's going on and on about Wizard.
Nice.
Did you guys see that thing?
Yeah,
practically breaks down in tears at the end. So there's this little 2-minute parody of it on my MySpace page right now. It's pretty hysterical. My wife even made the like a little intro song that like parodies his intro song. It's pretty dead on. Like Bob doesn't seem anything like the actual guy, and I actually think the Comics Foundry blog is somewhat of like a deadpan joke. Because no way did he get that upset.
I don't see how. Yeah, that was pretty over the top.
Yeah, but our thing takes it like 10 times further over the top, and it's really funny.
Nice. We'll have to check that out.
Nice.
Yeah, it's 2 minutes. It's crazy, though. It's we just uploaded it like half an hour ago, and it's already had like 165 views or something like that. It's weird. YouTube, this is my first time ever putting any like a video online at all, so it's very bizarre.
I didn't know.
My friend Count Dante, who did the thing, has been sort of in like a feud with Jack Black because he claims to be the guy that the real Nacho Libre was based on. And he's been calling Jack Black out and challenging him to wrestle and challenging him to a karaoke off and things like that because he's in a power trio as well. So it's pretty funny. It's really funny because he doesn't look anything like the guy from Comics Foundry, but he's just wearing horn-rimmed glasses and a black shirt.
So it works. You have some you have some interesting friends, Ed.
I try to.
Have you ever, speaking of wrestling, though, if you're into, have you ever heard of something called Lucha Vavoom?
Now what's that?
It's we got turned on this by Jeff Darrow.
Actually, a friend of Jeff Darrow.
A friend, yeah, and it's a combination of luchador wrestling, stand-up comics, and burlesque show. And they're going on in,
God,
like, Southern California. They're huge. I think if you just Google Lucha...
Oh, I think Bob has my friend Bob, who is Count Dante, I think he's actually done some work on some of that stuff, like done some announcing for them when they come to San Francisco.
It's freaking awesome.
Yeah, he knows all about that stuff. Yeah.
It's hot. It's hot.
You put anything in a luchador mask these days, and it's awesome. So
yeah, exactly.
Did you? Are you keeping up with Exterminators?
I have not read Exterminators. Actually, I was waiting for the trade, and then my store sold out. So I'm getting. I know. I feel like an asshole for waiting for the trade, but I got so used to getting all the DC books for free for so long that it's hard for me to try. I tend to try out like a couple of the Vertigo like new ones whenever they launch a new book and stick with it for 4 or 5 issues to see if I'm gonna like it or not. And I've been picking up Testament and American Virgin because friends of mine are working on them.
Sure. We absolutely.
And I don't
love
know the guys
who
do Exterminators. So fuck them.
we just did an interview with Simon Oliver who is
are
the writer of it
now.
Yeah, but we're just.
I tape everything, but we can always edit it out if
no,
you.
No, that's fine. It's funny.
So believe me. Go back and listen to it if you in your abundant spare time. We actually interviewed Simon Oliver last Monday, and he's got it right now. The guy has never written anything commercially before. This is like his first published work, and it's freaking awesome.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah. It's there was actually these crazy internet rumors going around that he was like Grant Morrison,
Chuck Austin.
Or Chuck Austin.
Oh, good. that's really good. That's the kind of crazy internet rumor that you really want.
Yeah, but it was funny.
Like one about like whoever writer X was or whatever. Remember that X-Men book and they didn't reveal what the guy's name was ever?
Oh, yeah.
What was the name of that book? I can't even remember. Why can't we remember? Oh, The Brotherhood, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, and it was written by, like, Malcolm X or something. And
they never did say who that was, did they?
Yeah, no, they never did say, but everyone assumes it's Howard Mackey.
Oh,
for some reason.
Nice.
Which, if that would be the case, then wasn't that like the last job he had?
Probably.
Do you have anything now?
I haven't seen anything from him in
in a couple of years. I don't remember the last.
But Sal.
Oh, I just wanted to from me personally, I just want to say thank you again for the Daredevil nod. The CO Salazar. That was pretty cool. So thank you.
Oh, sure. No problem, man.
He's like, what the hell are you talking about? I was really hoping I was going to get, like, you know, anally raped by the Punisher at some point or something. That would have been fun, but...
Well, I didn't want the Punisher to cheat on Turk, really. that was my subtle, like, implication of the way Turk was looking at the Punisher when the Punisher was like, you know, back in their shared cell, was that... Obviously, you know, when you're sharing a cell with the Punisher, you're the bitch.
Yeah.
You know, like, obviously whoever's there is just, you know.
No matter who it is, you're the bitch.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Sorry, but.
That's all right. No, like I said, I just wanted to say thanks again. That was extremely cool.
Now can we not talk about that ever again?
All right.
Yeah. How many times has that been discussed on the
quite a bit.
Show? Probably about once a month, which is probably, yeah.
It's my claim to fame. Anytime we start talking
about the most expensive thing we own.
Yeah. Yeah. Anytime we talk about like what comics we own or what, you know, I'm like, yeah, but I was in Daredevil and it's just a trump card. You know?
Yeah. It's like thread killer.
Yeah.
Nice.
All right.
So what we want to talk about, obviously, Ed, is Criminal. We are really passionate about creator-owned work.
Like to me, the hardest thing about doing a creator-owned book is like getting the people who read your other stuff to even know that the creator-owned book exists. Bendis tells me he'll run into people at cons who are. He'll be sitting there at his booth, and someone will come up and go, "Hey, I'm your biggest fan. I have every issue of Ultimate Spider-Man," and they've never heard of Powers. Yeah. How is that possible?
Yeah, I don't understand that either. It's just so strange to imagine. As much as writers are followed nowadays,
yeah,
how you can only—I mean—but it's amazing to us. I mean, we kind of got in doing the podcast, and we fell into the sort of the niche of talking about smaller books because nobody was talking about all these books that we read and really loved, and people just didn't know about them.
Have copies of Casanova on the shelf there?
Absolutely.
My
store was sold out this week already.
We are.
I went in yesterday afternoon, and I guess you have to go on the first day.
Well, I'm sure Matt will be very happy to hear about that. We've been pushing that book since before it came out. We love Casanova.
Well, actually, we'll ask Mark, our store manager. Mark, how many issues of Casanova 1 did we sell, and how many of 2 have we sold? Yeah, 20 of number 1 and probably close to the same on number 2, so yeah. Casanova's been doing well here.
Wow, cool.
Yeah, pushing.
How many X-Men does he sell?
How many?
I like to do comparison tests because there the Isotope was selling the same number of Sleeper as they were of X-Men.
He said about 60.
I was like, do you sell 5 X-Men?
He said about 60 Uncanny.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah.
So Casanova's doing like a third of X-Men there. That's pretty good. If he could do that everywhere, they'd be rich.
Yeah, no kidding.
but you know, everyone is excited about your work on X-Men right now, along with
Daredevil and Captain America.
But we wanted to have you on the show this week to talk about an upcoming project that we're really excited about, and that is Criminal, which is coming out from Icon. Can you tell us a little bit about how this all came about?
Criminal is something that it's sort of grown through a variety of paths that all sort of ended up converging in this book, but a few years back, a European publisher had asked me to try to come up with something for them, and I came up with a pitch for a crime thing, and we went back and forth on it a little bit, and just it never ended up happening, but I always, you know, that was about 5 years ago, and it sort of sparked this thing in me that, you know, was really, you know, when given the chance to try to come up with something that, you know, just a pitch for a market outside of superheroes, like, what would I do? And you know, so the story that I'd come up with and the characters just kept banging around in my head, and then other stories started appearing, and I kept thinking of ways to link the various stories together and create this sort of, you know, underground world. And so I've been sort of formulating it in my notebooks and in my head for a number of years, and then after Sean and I finished Sleeper, we were talking about, you know, what are we going to do next, and, you know, what and where are we going to do whatever we do next, and we had something in the works at another publisher, this we were going to do this thing called Black Sails for IDW, and we just never ended up coming up with exactly the right deal, and we were, and then Rick Remender put out his comic, Sea of Red, which was almost the exact same concept, and so I was like, I don't necessarily, you know if I want to jump right into this thing, then if there's already something else that's sort of like it, and so I was trying to think, what else should Sean and I do, and I just suddenly, I was like, I want to do the crime thing, and so I sat down, I opened up all my notebooks, and just, came up with, like, an outline, and I had just signed at Marvel, and one of the things that I had talked to them about signing there for so long was that I wanted access, hopefully to the Icon label if I could pitch something there and get, like, consideration, and that was no problem. They were like, yeah, okay, pitch something. So I pitched Criminal and called up Sean and said, hey, do you want to do this thing? And he said, yeah. And so next thing you know, we're doing the book.
Well, for anyone that doesn't know what the sort of basis of the book is, can you give us a rundown of sort of the
Hollywood pitch?
Yeah, the pitch. What is Criminal?
Hey, I'm really bad at the high concept pitch. Criminal is basically like, it's like the American outlaw in a way. It's like America loves the bad guys who aren't really bad. We'll take a bad guy that is really bad, and we'll whitewash out the really bad stuff, like Billy the Kid and Jesse James, and Jesse James and his brother supposedly were part of Quantrell's Raiders, who were, completely like the most vicious people alive, during the Civil War, and yet, after the Civil War, we paint Jesse James as being like this sort of heroic character, and because that's just something that we do when we read about like someone who lives outside the law, who is also like kind of a bit of a good guy while being a bad guy. Like, we just love that, and that's sort of the world of Criminal, is like these characters who exist outside the system and outside the law that we all feel sort of trapped by sometimes. Well, these people are like living outside of that, and there's a whole other code of rules and conduct that they have to live by, and that's kind of the pitch, is like, this is a picture of that world, but in reality it's more of a combination of like everything that I've liked about noir all rolled into one package. It's any kind of noir story, from a heist story to like a man on the run to a falsely accused guy to just pure out revenge kind of stuff, can all take place within Criminal, within this world we've created with and this cast of characters. It's almost like a rotating team book or something, like the way New Avengers is, in a way. Like, not really, because they're not a team of people, but the main characters all know each other and all hang out in the same bar and all work together on jobs occasionally, and yet they each sort of get a chance to take their turn in the spotlight as the stories progress.
Well, that's sort of the feeling I got from the information from the preview and everything, was that you kind of set this up so that you can go in a lot of different directions with whatever characters you choose to introduce. Is that what you planned from the beginning of being able to...
Yeah, it's like Criminal is the umbrella title for... It's, in a way, it's kind of like Sin City or even 100 Bullets, in the way that different characters will take the lead for one story or another. I mean, I don't want to compare it too much to Sin City, other than I'd love to have their sales figures, but it might feel if someone was a huge fan of Sin City, there's a certain vibe that that our book might fill the niche of, that sort of underworld kind of thing. But we're definitely not trying to do a Sin City. But at the same time, the way he did that with the stories was, I thought, really brilliant, with having the city be the main character instead of the characters, so you could, do a lot of different kinds of stories with a lot of different characters. You could kill off your main character and still keep your comic going. Like, I thought that was just a really brilliant idea. That was the idea with Sleeper, with Criminal, was that Criminal would be the umbrella title, and I would be able to create these various characters and have them all sort of take their turn, and that way each character can sort of be their own little franchise in a way.
Well, I was a huge fan of Sleeper. That was the first series that you had done that I really, kind of perked up my ears and said, wow, this Brubaker guy is someone I'm going to have to follow. How exciting is it for you to be back working with Sean on a book?
Oh, it's, you know, I was never going to not work with Sean again. You know, it was like we were always going to do something, you know, after Sleeper together. So, you know, and when you see the actual first issue, like the preview pages we put online, I think are great. But the actual first issue, especially like the last 10 or 12 pages of the art for the last, for the first issue, like I just got all the finals a couple weeks ago. It's, you know, I love everything Sean's done with me, and you know, I'm not trying to diss the first half of the issue, but the last half of the issue, it's like Sean just hit this new plateau, and, you know, maybe if you put a page from the beginning and a page from the end together, they'll look exactly alike, but to me, I see, like, just these subtle differences, and you know, his confidence as a storyteller even, you know, seems like it hit a new level, which is just amazing, but, yeah, it's interesting because, you know, with the way Daredevil and Captain America are doing right now, where they're actually climbing up the sales charts as opposed to going down, which, you know, Marvel tells me is a really big deal. like, I'm getting email and message board posts and, you know, all this stuff from people who have never heard of me until 6 months ago, you know, and they've never read Sleeper. And so it's like I'm trying to sell, you know, I'm getting this chance to sell to this whole new audience. Now, for, you know, it's great actually because we've got Criminal coming out. I think we're going to hit a lot more people with this than we did with Sleeper. You know, and then we've got that whole franchise back there to sell them actually. So we'll be putting that in the back of the book. It's like, oh, you just heard of us? Well, you know, now you can go get this.
Go check out this amazing series. Absolutely.
You know, it's really great. I mean, Sean and I think this is going to be, you know, something that we can do a lot more long term than Sleeper, because Sleeper was never designed to last more than a year, really. And you know, people don't realize that the second year of it was there because, you know, because Jim Lee really just wanted it to be there, and so he asked us to do another year of it.
I you had told us that last year at Wizard World, and I couldn't believe that because the second season of that book was so good, and I couldn't imagine it not being a part of that series.
Well, it was just. I think I was working on one, you know, the last couple issues of the first year, and I got the call from Scott Denver saying, you know, Jim wants to, you know, go on a hiatus for like 6 months and then release the second trade and come back, you know, with another, you know, release the second trade and a new, you know, season of the book all at the same time and give it like more of a push. And, you know, they gave it more of a push, but it's still, you know, it was still an uphill battle the whole time. But, so some of the, you know, some of it was me sitting around and thinking, okay, well, if I was going to do more of it, like, what would make it interesting and what direction could we go in? And then, like, you know, once I started thinking about it and realizing I could wake up Lynch, like, a bunch of new ideas came.
Nice.
So, but it ended up having the exact same ending that it was going to have all the whole way through, except with Lynch involved. But it was always going to be a bad ending.
Listen to a RoundComics.com podcast new every Monday. For once, you won't be lying to your parents when you tell them you're not looking at porn.
You know, I was wondering, you had really seemed to come out and do some new interesting things trying to promote Criminal. You had putting out the trailer. You have, I think there's a Criminal theme song that you put together. I think you
had reviews. I'll put that together, yeah.
And you've kind of pushed it in a different way than maybe we've seen you do other books or other things. Is that, I mean, I assume that's because it isn't, you know, a Marvel book or a DC book, and it is your own creator-owned stuff. Can you talk a little bit about how, you know, how that, the differences there between, you know, your own creator-owned work that you're trying to get out there and the stuff that's, you know, you've done for Marvel or DC?
Well, I mean, I think I learned from watching, you know, the books that I did before that I really, you know, cared about that, you know, did okay but didn't do as well as you would think they would do. You know, Gotham Central and Sleeper are sort of like cult books as opposed to, you know, Gotham Central, the guy who's the vice president in charge of like selling stuff to Hollywood at DC told me that, you know, everyone at Warner Brothers just loved Gotham Central, and if they hadn't had like a moratorium on like Batman TV shows, but he could have set up Gotham Central at WB like in a heartbeat.
Wow.
Because it would be like a Batman show that they barely ever had to have Batman in.
Yeah, you think that would be perfect.
And, you know, and it's a cop drama, which, you know, they know, everybody knows how to do. So, you know, the stuff that I've gotten the most recognition for outside of comics has always been those, you know, those more personal, smaller, you know, sort of cult-oriented things. And, you know, I never, you know, I don't think there's a reason that those books couldn't have sold more other than that people just didn't know they existed. You know, I mean, it's just, there's a wall of noise in that preview catalog, and you have to do anything to just sort of get the word out. And I realized going in, you know, I mean, we're taking a huge risk on this book. We're not getting, you know, page rates for it. And Sean has three kids, you know, so he can't do this book for free. If this monthly series doesn't hit like a certain level, we're not going to be able to keep doing it beyond, you know, a certain amount of issues, because, you know, we just, you know, it just, fiscal reality is, you know, we can't do this thing for free. None of us are 20 years old. And, I mean, I'll do it for free as long as I can pay Sean and Val to do it, but...
You'd prefer, you know, not to.
I would prefer not to, yeah, exactly. No, I would prefer it to be a raging success, though. But, you know, my feeling was just basically like, okay, well, what do I do to try to make sure that we can keep doing this for as long as we want to, you know, preferably, you know, a good 5 or 10 years. And the only thing I could think of was just to try as hard as possible to get the word out to as many, you know, fans and retailers and, you know, news sources and everything. And that was one of the reasons I thought, okay, well, when you announce a book and you show, like, a few preview pages of artwork, they're always, like, the first 5 pages of the comic, or they're within the first 5 pages of the comic, which are not always the best pages to show, and often it's because those are the first pages that are turned in. You know, they're not the most exciting, you know, stuff from your storyline. And I had just gotten back from the movies one day and saw the preview for The Inside Man, which I think the preview, I like that movie a lot, but I think the preview is actually better than the movie, even, because it gives you this sense of, you know, this really exciting, you know, like, heist picture. And then, you know, and instead the movie is actually just kind of a tense, you know, heist picture instead of, you know, that something. And so I was thinking about it, and I was like, you know, we should just do something special to promote Criminal. Instead of actually just showing a bunch of pages from the first issue, we should actually make, like, a movie trailer on paper where we give people a sense of what the entire first storyline will feel like, and a real hook to try to, you know, show them how the comic will be. And part of that, too, comes down to me not ever being able to come up with a one-sentence hook to try to sell a comic. You know, like, I was talking to Brian Azzarello about this years ago, and he said, you know, when we pitched 100 bullets to people, we said, it's about revenge. It's, you know, what would you do if someone gave you, you know, a briefcase with a gun and 100 bullets in it, and anyone you shot with that, you'd get off scot-free. You know, that's the hook to sell the book. They didn't sell the book by saying it's this incredibly complicated conspiracy theory about the foundation of America.
Yeah, that's definitely the appetizer before dinner, if that's the...
Yeah, book. Exactly. So it's like, I've been struggling to come up with, you know, with a good, like, one-sentence hook for Criminal, and all I can think of is, you know, it's about the people who do the things that you wish you could do. When you're standing in the line at the bank and imagining what it would be like to try to rob the place, like, these are the people who actually do it. But it's, you know, it's hard to sell, it's hard to come up with something like that. So I thought, okay, you know, well, then I'll just do, like, a preview and show people, because I'm much better at the actual work than at the hype.
Well, I completely understand where you're coming from in that regards. I mean, I was on the, you know, drive here today. I'm thinking, wow, there has to be something positive about, like, being terminally ill, because I could just then run into people with my car as many times as possible, or,
yeah,
you know, just not giving a shit, you know,
yeah,
not caring.
Dead anyway.
Yeah, what difference does it make? You know, that sort of escapism of being able to get away with all those things we dream about, but we can't because we're civilized human beings.
Yeah, and I like that. You know, yeah, I like that thinking like that all the time. You know, that's what writers are, just people who, you know, wish they could do stuff, and instead they go home and write about it. But we put that trailer out, and I think Sean didn't realize, and he said this in an interview recently too, he didn't realize we weren't just going to be able to cut and paste all those panels into the comic. He did it in the first issue. There's a couple, I think, that he actually ends up using, but or just reusing sort of and redrawing aspects. aspects of them, but he didn't realize he wasn't just going to be able to do those. And I said, well, you know, if we ever have like a limited edition hardback or something, now we have an extra.
Yeah, you know. Nice.
But we put that online, and it's had close to 20,000 downloads in the last month, which is pretty good. And I've had people, you know, I went to the grassroots movement sort of on this and went on Bendis board and a couple other places and just really tried to enlist, you know, whatever fan base I've got into helping me out with getting the word out about the book and passing the PDF around. And I've had some phenomenal response on that. I mean, there's, you know, probably 60 to 75 people who responded to that by, you know, printing it out and taking it into their retailer. There's a guy who told me he was Xeroxing it. He was copying it 10 times. There were 10 different comic book stores within an hour of his house in New Jersey, and he was going to print out copies and take it to all of them and talk to them about the book. And some other guy said he printed it in his student paper, which, you know, goes out to like 10,000 people. And, you know, and then Kirkman, you know, stepped up to print it in Walking Dead, which comes out next week.
That
all
was
the books
huge.
And catalogs. And, you know, it's just, it's been pretty amazing and overwhelming the amount of sort of grassroots support that has come out to really try to get word out about the book and push it on people. And then I did a thing where I printed up like a limited edition ash can of the trailer and took that to San Diego and gave about half of them away there and then mailed the other half of them out to retailers, you know, signed copies, because, you know, it's a limited edition thing. They can use it to preview stuff to their customers, but they can also, you know, sell it or give it away as a prize or something.
Mark's wondering where his is.
Yeah,
you didn't get one to Dark Tower. What, you couldn't ship him to
Chicago? Is he on the comic book whatever forum? Does he ever go on there? I put a thread up there for people to sign up.
Are you on the comic book whatever forum?
I think he busted him. Well, that I was going to say. I just wanted to say that that
the
flyer.
The CBIA, does he know what that is?
CBIA, do you know what that is? Oh, he has no idea what you're talking about. Well, that was actually done by.
Okay, email me his address and I'll send one.
All right. That was actually.
A few of them left.
That was actually done by Pat Loika, right? The didn't he
Loika
create the flyer for you from the Bendis board?
Oh, that thing. Yeah. No, this is something else actually. I actually had this company Kablam. I did an ad swap with them actually, and they're getting an ad in the First Issue Criminal, and they printed up an edition of 500. It's like an actual, you know, full comic. It's the five pages with like a text page and the wraparound cover for
like
the first issue,
the ash can of 76.
Yeah, it's an actual ash can.
Okay.
Yeah, Pat did the, Pat put up a flyer somewhere online, though, which supposedly people have been downloading and bringing into stores and stuff. So, yeah, it's been kind of amazing the amount that people have really, you know, it feels like everybody who kind of was mad about Gotham Central and Sleeper not doing better than they did, have all decided that they need to make this book succeed, you know. But also, you know, like yesterday, apparently on the Bad Signal, I emailed Warren and a bunch of other people like a PDF of the first issue with half of it in color and half of it in black and white, because it's not done yet.
Mm-hmm.
And Warren like mentioned it on Bad Signal that he had, you know, that he said it was fucking great, which, you know, that's great, because I mean, she's the first person to actually have read it.
Nice.
Hi, I'm Matt Friction, and this is Around Comics, and it's a podcast that you listen to on your pod, and it's casted to your pod, and you can listen to it, and it's sweet. And I love it, and I love you.
One thing I was going to ask is, with the general comic population, which is already kind of a niche, how much do you think the Icon label is recognized by people, and how much is it starting to be recognized? It's like Vertigo is an offshoot of DC, but I think that it holds enough, you know, water with comic fans. Where do you think Icon is right now?
I think Icon is seen more of as being sort of like Marvel's image in a way. Like, I don't see enough people don't really know who it is. Like, I got an email today from Matt Hollingsworth asking me what Icon was, so he's coloring Daredevil.
I was going
to
say.
So, clearly Matt is not a guy who goes to the comic store every week either, but, you know, I mean, the people who know, you know, who know comics and buy, like, genre comics at all outside of superheroes, you know, a lot of them have heard of Icon, at least, and know that it's sort of a label where sort of big name same guys at Marvel get to do their creator-owned stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's very much still in its infancy, though, and I don't think it's ever going to be as big as something like Image. There's no reason for Marvel to want it to be that big. It's kind of like what their Epic label was in the 80s when, you know, some of their guys who, you know, they wanted to keep them happy, and so they'd let them do, you know, this book that, you know, was going to reach a smaller niche audience than the big name stuff that they do there. But, you know, it keeps you from wandering, basically, and it also keeps you from getting stagnant and being unhappy because you don't get to do the kind of stuff you want to do. You know, so I mean, I'm extra thrilled to be working for them that I get to do this book. And the advantage of being at Icon as opposed to being at someplace like Image or even Vertigo is that you're in that Marvel catalog, and a lot of people look at that thing. And there are still, you know, there's probably a small percentage of retailers out there who only order stuff from Marvel, you know, who barely order any. I mean, I've been to stores like that that they're just like, clearly they're a Marvel store, and it's really hard to find anything else. So just being on that level really helps out, I think. But I mean, I would like Icon to eventually get to the point where, you know, with me and Brian and a few other people that I know that they've talked to about doing stuff, you know, actually keep putting out quality work there. It'll probably, you know, be considered this little, small, prestigious little line.
We actually,
you know,
we
be good.
We talked to John Romita Jr. A couple weeks ago, and he I don't know if he dropped a hint on us, but he said that he's working on something with Mark Miller called Kick-Ass for Icon. So we don't know if he was pulling our leg or not. So
yeah, I don't think he is. I've heard rumors of Mark doing some stuff at Icon, but I don't know whether you know how far along in the schedule it is or when it'll happen.
Can you give us a little insight as to how the deal with Icon works? I mean, obviously it's not, you know, it's a Marvel owned company, but as you sort of hinted to, you're not getting paid a page rate. They're publishing it.
Well, I'm sure everybody has a different deal. We wanted a deal that was closer to the kind of deal that Image has, and you know, I'm sure my deal is different than Brian's and is different than JMS's or David Mack's. And for me, it was just I wanted full ownership of the thing, and I was willing to, you know, to make that deal with them to just, you know, it's a bigger gamble, you know, but the payoff, if you succeed, the payoff is so much better, you know. And so, I mean, other than that, I can't really talk about the contract stuff.
No, of course not.
But basically, it's you know, it's a risk that we decided to take there. You know, we probably could have worked out a deal with them that was closer to like a Vertigo or Wildstorm kind of deal, but, you know, I wanted real ownership and real control, and I felt like, you know, with Scene of the Crime and Sleeper, that, you know, two projects I created, you know, one I don't even own, like, I get a copyright on because it takes place in the Wildstorm universe, and, you know, that was just the deal we worked out. It's more like Planetary, where we have participation, but we don't own anything, and we don't get, you know, any say in what they do with it. Yet it's the thing that I've created that's had the most interest in Hollywood, like, 6 or 8 months ago, before Fox renewed 24, there was you know, the last thing I ever heard about Sleeper was that, you know, Kiefer Sutherland and Tom Fontana were like developing it as a TV show for the WB,
and then
Sutherland signed on for another 3 years of 24. So I'm assuming that's out.
Yeah, I can't see Sleeper on WB though.
I can't really. I could see it on FX or HBO.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or even Showtime, Brotherhood. But yeah, I mean, Sleeper and Scene of the Crime are things I created that were published, you know, through Vertigo and Wildstorm, respectively. And, you know, while I know that the guy Greg Novak at DC really really likes those projects and takes them out and pitches them every year, you know, I always feel like I wish I was more involved in that process, and I'd like to have more control over it, and, you know, if it's going to happen at all. And also, you know, after a while of doing that, you know, I just wanted to try something the other way. I see all my friends going off and doing books at Image or Icon or whatever, and having that control and that ownership, and, you know, if you succeed, that payoff So I just thought, all right, I want to do something like that. So, you know, I convinced Sean to sort of take the gamble with me.
Well, I don't know. I'm just going to throw this out there. I'm thinking maybe a criminal video game. You know, from Rockstar, you know,
game.
Something like that. I think.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
just throwing that out there.
The guys who did Hitman can approach me about the rights after they listen to this podcast.
There you go.
There you go.
Yeah, I would love a criminal video game. It would be awesome, actually. You could have a game where it took place in, like, you know, a city like Grand Theft Auto where you actually planned, like, heists and stuff.
There you go.
Hey.
I think you got to talk to Paul Jenkins. I know he does video games and stuff, doesn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah. I will talk to Paul after we get the first couple issues out, maybe.
There you go.
Nice.
You know, I just wanted
something to tell.
I just want an appearance by C.O. Salazar in there somewhere. That's all I'm asking for in the video
You'll
game.
Be the first guy whacked.
Nice.
Well, we had some guys on about a month and a half ago or so doing another crime book, and want to know if you had heard about The Cross Bronx, which is...
Oh, yeah. I have the PDF waiting to read down in my office of the first issue.
Yeah, it's just kind of nice to see some really good crime noir and other street level fiction really getting some attention and some great names on it. So
yeah, I'm really hoping that they do well with that, because that's, you know, the art that Mike's doing on that looks really good, and I think Ivan is a great writer who needs, you know, a little bit more recognition.
Absolutely.
Oh, a lot more recognition, really.
You know, Ivan Brandon and Michael Avenomian, by the way, on Cross Bronx, so please check that out. But looking at, you know, through your career, you've had, you know, such a great feel for street-level stories, and, of course, you're doing a lot of superhero stuff now. Is street-level really where you feel comfortable?
I would say I try to be a fairly versatile writer in general. I think the fact that I'm someone who likes to write mysteries and crime stories and things like that really benefits me writing the superhero stuff. But, you know, I'm fairly eclectic in my taste. I like almost, you know, I think the only genre that I don't like in literature is probably romance. And, you know, but I'll read romance comics from, like, the 50s. But, you know, I like anything that's good in any genre. And I've always wanted to do, you know, other genres in my comics work. I, you know, one of my dreams is to get rich enough that I can retire and just write Jughead comics for Archie all day long.
Why can't,
you know,
I see that?
That would be my version of retirement, would be to get up and write Jughead stories every day. But also, you know, I would love to write a romance comic, and, you know, with the X-Men, I felt like, okay, here's my chance to do a giant space opera.
Yeah.
You know, and then I started working on it and realized, you know, these characters are actually really fun to write. Writing the superhero action parts is sometimes a bit harder than I expected it to be, because they all have superpowers, which, you know, is a little bit different than Captain America and Daredevil, you know, who have their own share of minor superpowers. But, you know, it's interesting. But I've always looked at, you know, that the model of Alan Moore as someone who, you know, could do any kind of story. I mean, I think the only kind of story I haven't really tried to do is a horror story. And that's probably because I don't think I'd be very good at it.
That's because Remender beat you to the vampirates.
Yeah, that was going to be more of a character piece. I mean, all my stuff is really just character drama thrown into different directions. But, you know, one of the things I really try to tap into when I do the superhero stuff is that sort of iconic, over-the-top, you know, roots of where the stuff comes from. And if you really... The roots of Marvel Comics is a combination of, like, the pulp mags and Shakespeare. You know, it's like Stan Lee writing this really over-the-top, you know, over-dramatic stuff, which is exactly the same kind of stuff that Shakespeare was doing in his day. Or Raymond Chandler or something said that, it, you know, people don't realize now that Shakespeare was just a popular writer. He was looked down upon in his day, and it's only hundreds of years later that people look at it as literature. At the time, he was just trying to hit as big an audience as he could possibly get. And, you know, if he'd been alive in, like, the 1920s, he would have been working for, like, Black Mask or someplace. And I look at the Stan Lee stuff in the 60s and just think, well, yeah, and if he'd been alive in the 60s, he'd have been, like, knocking on Marvel's door trying to write Spider-Man, which is basically like Hamlet in a high school.
Yeah, I remember somebody, I don't remember who it was, but somebody said if Shakespeare was alive today, he'd be writing sitcoms.
Yeah, that's probably true. Yeah, he'd have been working on Friends.
Nice.
If it would have been, It would have been like Hamlet and Friends.
Well, I mean,
I really think that you can, you know, you can look at everything. Like Daredevil is a pulp comic. You know, Captain America is like a pulp, like thriller spy book, really. And the X-Men is like, you know, it's literally a space opera.
Well, talking about the X-Men, I was wondering. I wanted to ask you. You know, a lot of your work in the past.
No, I won't be using Adam X.
No. Oh, damn. Forget it. I'm canceling. Oh, thank God. I was wondering what you found the difference between writing, you know, a lot of your work has been solo characters or, you know, basically one character in the story. But the X-Men is a totally different dynamic. I mean, you have this cast of characters that you have to somehow get screen time for all of them at some point.
Oh yeah.
Have you found it difficult at all? I mean, have you, you know?
I had kind of a breakthrough finally after my fourth issue. I realized, like, okay, wait a second. Not every single one of them needs like an important scene in every issue. Sometimes they just need to be there for the fight scene, you know. And then I realized with X-Men, going back and rereading like the first 100 issues or so of the new X-Men years, you know, from 94 up. I think I read. Actually, I probably read about 200 issues of those, wherever the essentials end. But there are often issues of X-Men that have very little action and are just all character pieces with just, you know, with maybe the action on three or four pages. And I realized people like the X-Men as characters. They sort of do take over, though. It's sometimes hard to fit the action in because these characters just want to stand around and whine at each other for 22 pages.
It's one of the longest-running soap operas in comic history.
And I respect that completely. I mean, that's what I'm trying to do, is just sort of simplify it a little bit and do the kind of stuff that I really like. Like, when I went back and reread that stuff, like, I think all the way through the whole Paul Smith run, it's really great. And, I mean, there's great ideas happening through all of the stuff even after that. I think my only reservation with it when going back and rereading it was that it got to the point where there were so many characters and so many different plot lines that were unresolved that when you get around issue 200 or so, they just start sort of overlapping each other, and I just lost track. And you know, I remember as a kid even just being like, what is going on in all these, you know, with all these characters, and who's this person from an alternate future, and, you know, just sort of getting lost in the details of it. So when Joss Whedon started doing the Astonishing X-Men, I remember picking up the first few issues and just being like, wow, it's like everything I liked about the X-Men. And, you know, without all those stuff that made me, like, really confused and feel like I'd missed 15 issues all the time.
Yeah, that was a pretty amazing job he did of making you. I mean, I think everyone sort of had that same feeling, was, wow, this is exactly what I loved about the X-Men.
This is what I grew up on.
Boiled down, yeah. But it doesn't feel dated or old. It's mm-hmm. fresh and new and exciting, but it's everything that I always wanted in an X-Men story.
The biggest struggle with writing those team books and writing a book that has that kind of history is sort of still keeping it simple, not letting the continuity sort of collapse on top of you. I don't know. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of continuity and a lot of, I mean, you're talking about a series where there's probably 4,000 back issues or something between all the various branch offs, and, you know, I mean, there was no possible way I could read every appearance of Warpath, and I tried. You know? And he's not even a popular character until, you know, 3 months ago. So, you know, he's a pretty minor, you know, guy. He was, you know, 10 rungs under Gambit on popularity level.
Just try and kill him, and then you'll find out how popular he is, right?
Yeah, I know. Banshee should have had his own series, apparently. He had his throat cut like 5 years earlier and hadn't been in the comic.
I'm Steve Bryant, and you're listening to Around Comics, and Tom Caters is not wearing any pants.
Speaking of X-Men continuity, we actually had one of our favorite posters on our forum is writing a column called,
Extraneous or examinations.
Examinations. Because he knows that so many people are coming back to the X-Men because you're writing it, that he has a column that he's writing about once a week to prime people and get them caught up on X-Men continuity, because he knows a lot of people
cool.
are falling out of it. Yeah, it's really
cool.
Neat.
And he's a huge X-Men fan. He's very excited. I mean,
I could read that.
we'll send you the link.
On that?
we'll send you the link to it.
Yeah.
Well, the one thing, I mean,
the link. I better bone up.
Yeah, it's Examinations by Dustin Drace at Around Comics. So Dustin's a great guy.
The month that the first two issues came out, I was sort of obsessively looking at all the X-Men fan message boards and stuff to see if people were liking it, and so I was reading so many things, and then after that I was like, okay, I can't sit and obsess about what X-Men fans are thinking about all day. Like, they've liked it so far. And then issue 3 came out, and I cruised by some of the message boards, and I knew that they weren't going to like it as much because it was an all Vulcan issue, and I knew that I was going to get a lot of flack for that. But
okay,
I'm shocked.
You got you.
I was a bit stunned. I felt a little like Chuck Austin for a second. This is what it must have felt like to have this many people hate you, and Bendis was like, "See, I told you."
Yeah, stay like, off the board.
Start doing the bigger books, and they turn on a dime.
Sooner or later,
they do a bad issue or an issue that they think is bad. You know, suddenly it's I hate this Brubaker guy. He's padding it out. You know, so I thought that was really funny, but I liked. A lot of people were predicting what the next Vulcan issue was going to be, and I saw that almost. You know, other than like one point that someone made, I think every single one of them was just so far off that I got really excited. I'm like, okay, they're going to love the next Vulcan issue then, because none of them realized that. You know, I spent the first four chapters of this X-Men story sort of laying the foundation to let everybody know, because I know there's always new readers to anything. When you're doing a 12 issue story, you've got to lay the groundwork before you can kind of yank the rug out from under people. So I felt like I needed to make sure everybody knew who all the characters were. They knew who the history of the Shi'ar to a certain degree, and they knew the bad guy before I could really start messing things up.
Well, you know, you've had a pretty golden touch so far. I mean, you killed Foggy Nelson, you killed Banshee, you brought back Bucky, and nobody's really complained to this point too much. So,
well, I didn't actually kill Foggy.
Well, no, but everyone thought you
okay,
did.
Spoilers.
That was what was great is that people were like, he killed Foggy. Brubaker will kill anybody. Did you see his cappy? He brought back Bucky and killed the Red Skull. I'm like, I haven't actually killed any. I mean, I killed some third tier, like, you know, minor characters who hadn't been used in 20 years. But other than Banshee, I haven't actually killed anybody.
Yeah, and we're not for sure about that yet. But
I tried to kill the Black Mask in an issue of Catwoman, and then like a year later, they just brought him back without like ever mentioning how he survived the fall.
That's comics. You know, we don't want to kiss your ass too bad, but Sal and I work together during the day, and we had both read the issue of Daredevil, the wrap-up of Devil in Cell Block D. And that was one hell of a piece of misdirection and sleight of hand in that story. That was a really nice wrap up to that story arc.
Oh, thanks. It was really hard to sit on the Foggy not really dead thing, especially as I got tons of hate mail about Foggy. Even from people who were loving the book, they still couldn't quite let go of the fact that I'd killed Foggy. I kept wanting to tell people, just wait. But even saying just wait kind of gives it away.
Yeah.
I was pissed you brought him back. I was glad you... No, I'm just kidding.
You were pissed I brought him back. I was going to reveal at the end of the second issue that he was really still alive. But Joe Quesada convinced me to hold off till the end of the first storyline.
It was perfect.
Joe would have preferred I hold off for like a year.
Oh, God.
But I was like... I don't think my nerves can handle it.
It was perfect. Well, and the bright shiny lights with the whole mystery Daredevil to kind of, you know, keep your eyes off that was awesome. Really loved it.
Oh, yeah.
I did want to say, I mean, reading that issue, there were so many wow moments in that issue that just blew me away. So, but enough about that. Let's talk about a new book that you've got coming out soon. With someone we've talked to before, Matt Fraction, the two of you are working on The Immortal Iron Fist.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that. I'm really excited about this book.
Yeah, where the heck this
came
from.
I'm an old Iron Fist fan, and I can't wait to see him back kicking some ass.
Yeah. Well, I had called dibs on Iron Fist, like, a long time ago, when I first got to Marvel and was out there for, like, a lunch one day. I said, look, I really want to do Iron Fist at some point, and... You know, so don't let anybody else do an Iron Fist series. And so it was sort of like penciled in that someday I would do Iron Fist. And when, you know, when I was doing the Daredevil storyline, and, you know, and I knew I was going to use Iron Fist as the second Daredevil, my editor, Warren, was like, well, we should do the Iron Fist mini after this. And it was going to be a mini series originally. And then, you know, I was like, ah, I don't think I'm going to be ready that soon to do it. And they got such a phenomenal response, like, from, you know, internally, like, people who knew that it was Iron Fist was like, oh, come on, let's do Iron Fist. There's never going to be a better time to do Iron Fist. So I got sort of, you know, I kept getting cajoled by Warren, and I said, okay, well, like, the only way I'm going to be able to do it is if I just co-write it with somebody then. And it was just going to be a five-issue miniseries originally, but then when we revealed that Iron Fist was the second Daredevil finally when that issue came out, like, that Daredevil sold out at most stores around the country within, like, 48 hours or something like that. And wow. And then they announced, you know, at the end of that issue, it announces the Immortal Iron Fist. And luckily, I didn't say miniseries, but people went insane. And, you know, between retailers and readers contacting Marvel and posting online about it, like, by Monday morning, like, I emailed somebody, I'm like, maybe we should do it as a monthly. And everybody at Marvel had already changed their minds on that, too. So suddenly it was a monthly, and it was bumped up from February to November. I was like, wait a second. Okay.
Oh, by the way, Ed.
You know, it was bumped up on the schedule, you know, and we have the artist who's, you know, who's working on it, who's doing the next issue of Daredevil, which comes out in like a week, and that guy's amazing.
Who's doing the art on it?
David Aja.
Oh, that's right.
He's a Spanish guy. He drew the main story for the giant-sized Wolverine that's coming out.
Nice.
And he works in a number of different styles, but the style that he's doing Daredevil in is, I don't even know how to describe it, really. He's got, it's like, his style has influences from, like, Bernie Wrightson and like, you know, Bissett and Tottleben and these guys, but at the same time, it's also got this great composition sense, and it almost looks like a combination of like, those guys and, like, an Alex Maleev or something like that. But he can also draw in this sort of more cartoony hip-hop kind of style, too, so he's an incredibly versatile illustrator who, I guess, has only been working in comics for a few years now. But I think he's going to be just enormous. When you see that issue of Daredevil next week, you'll see what I mean. There's a couple scenes in there that just knocked me on my ass.
How did you get hooked up with Matt Fraction on this project?
I've just known Matt sort of for a few years and been watching his stuff. And I knew that he was in at Marvel because... when he was pitching for the Punisher book, I sort of helped sort of shepherd him through that process a little bit and let him know, you know, just sort of was someone he could talk to and about, like, you know, how to get the stuff so he didn't give Axel too much or too little or, you know, anything, to just sort of get him up to date on the Marvel universe in a way, because he wasn't really that into it. And so, you know, we were already communicating about the Punisher stuff, and he needed to talk to me about the Punisher stuff with Daredevil and Captain America and stuff like that because of Civil War. So we'd already been talking a lot, and when the idea of using a co-writer came up, I gave him a list, and Fraction's name was on the list, and they had so much success with pairing Bendis with Brian Reed for the Spider-Woman origin thing, and then being able to launch Brian Reed as sort of a name guy after that. And, you know, but Brian Reed is really well known and the video game industry and really well respected there. You know, he was not known to comics people at all, but, you know, his Ms. Marvel book launching out of House of M launched higher than, you know, Warren and Ellis and I launched our, like, Captain America and Iron Man books. And they just kind of felt like it would help Matt in a way, too. It would help raise Matt's profile for them a little bit to be paired up with me on this book. And I was like, yeah, that's great. You know, I love Matt's stuff. And, you know, if I was, and, you know, knowing Matt that he likes to kick-splode, you know, it was perfect, because it was like, I want this book to be, you know, I want it to be a kung fu book. I don't want it to be a book about a bunch of guys sitting around and meditating and talking about Kung Fu.
Well, it's amazing that the guy who's writing Casanova is doing Punisher and Iron Fist. It's going to be real interesting. And Matt's a great writer, but it's going to be interesting to see the difference and how he works around that. So, and you
they're not really that different, other than I think Punisher is probably just as funny and dense as Casanova, and with Iron Fist, I think what we're going, you know, I'm trying to push Matt in a few different directions, but I also you know, I don't want it to be, I want it to be the Iron Fist comic that I always wanted when I was a kid. You know, like, I was really mad when Iron Fist got canceled as a kid, and I never completely came around to Power Man and Iron Fist. Like, I like Power Man and Iron Fist, and I certainly bought it. But
you heathen!
I just wanted an Iron Fist book, and I like, I even like, you know, Luke Cage's solo book. Like, I would have bought both books as solo books. I didn't need like the 10-speed and brown shoe thing.
So there's no chance of Bendis giving you Power Man, Luke.
Well, I have plans to, you know, to have some appearances with Luke and Misty and the various cast, but really, I'm trying to find a way to make Iron Fist this book. You know, Matt and I have been talking about it a lot, and we really want the book to have a sort of balance somewhere between, like, you know, this really cool kung fu Hong Kong action kind of book, and also, you know, a sort of Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. kind of, you know, crazy espionage thing, that which is something that, you know, Master of Kung Fu, the Shang-Chi book, always had a little bit of that feel, but, you know, I want to mix that with the sort of corporate espionage angle, too, because, you know, Danny Rand is basically a kung fu billionaire.
Right.
Who runs, like, an international conglomerate, and I thought, you know, let's actually explore that a little bit and use that angle as our way into the sort of, you know, international espionage kind of thing. And, you know, but to do that in a way that where somebody's getting kicked or punched on almost every page.
<You know? laughs>
All right. A lot of boardroom scenes. And also to do it in a way that finds a balance with that sort of Eastern mysticism stuff that Iron Fist is based on. So it's a real juggling act to try to get the exact right elements in and still make it feel like there's really a driving force of action behind everything, too. But I think, you know, he's a really cool character, and I've said this in a few of our meetings. I truly believe the only reason that Iron Fist comic in the 70s did not succeed was because of the capri pants and the ballet shoes. That's the only thing wrong with that costume, is that, you know, and I really think it's that somebody gave Gil Kane, like, a magazine of pictures of people in kung fu outfits, and he saw that all the kung fu gis ended around the calf, and so he'd just have Iron Fist, like, leggings end there. But it's like, yeah, nobody has skin-tight pants that ends there who does kung fu.
Well,
you know, and it just looks dumb. Even as a kid, I was like, why doesn't he have boots? You know, why is he wearing ninja boots like the guys in the Chuck Norris movie?
It's the traditional Kunlun, you know, honorable, I don't know, who knows, it is
no,
dumb.
No,
but...
no, it's not. Well, anyway, we're changing the boot.
All right. Well,
get over it, fanboys. We've been working really hard to slightly tweak the classic Iron Fist look so that we don't lose everything that's cool about it, but at the same time make it something that seems actually functional and that covers up his calves.
Well, let's we're definitely looking forward to that. There's no question about it. I know a lot of people are.
It's gonna be pretty awesome. It's gonna go in a lot of different directions, and it's a fascinating, you know, character, and there's a history to, you know, to it. The reason that I always wanted to do it was because in the old Iron Fist, there's like a scene where the Steel Serpent first sees the Iron Fist costume when he's a little kid, and he's Li Kung the Thunderer's son. And Li Kung says, you know, there's the garb of the immortal Iron Fist. And I always thought, where'd that costume come from? Like, someone else must have worn that costume at some point. Like, they didn't, you know, they didn't just know that someday, lo, there will come an Iron Fist, you know. And,
So it's out there. So, yeah, that's an interesting. Yeah, definitely. I never thought of it that way.
That's part of. Well, apparently, someone in the 90s, there was two issues of Iron Fist before it got canceled, and at some point they revealed. Actually, I thought it was my invention, but they revealed that there were, you know, dozens of people who'd been the Iron Fist throughout, you know, the entire history of Kunlun. And I thought, okay, well, it wasn't an original thought, but hopefully I'll be able to explore it in a way that makes the book stay around longer. But, you know, the opening scene in the comic is actually, you know, one of those past Iron Fists doing something, and then it cuts to Danny Rand. And you know, I just like the juxtaposition of history and the thought that, you know, that Danny Rand is not just, you know, this kung fu superhero. He's part of a legacy. You know, and that's something that, you know, that is really interesting, and that isn't explored that often. So there's going to guy who was like Iron Fist, like, you know, in World War One and the time period after that. And,
well, that brings me to something. As long as I got you here, I kind of want to pitch at you, and it's nothing. It's not
no pitching.
No, well, no, not from that not from that angle. I just want to see, because I'm a huge Captain America fan, and
oh, yeah.
And I personally think that even in your short run of Captain America, you've already done one of the best Captain America runs of all time. And
well, clearly.
What? No, I'm serious. But anyway, what I want to see is you and somehow you get Ed Brubaker, not Ed Brubaker, jeez, what's... Greg Rucka.
Oh.
To come over to Marvel, and I want to see an Invaders book.
Yes. You need to do an Invaders book.
You and Rucka and Steve Epting doing an Invaders book.
Me and Rucka and Steve Epting.
What do you think? Any chance of that?
I don't know if that's going to happen anytime soon, but...
Sometime, eventually, before we die.
The Winter Soldier special is going to have some Invaders stuff in it, actually. It's got Bucky's Last Christmas in it before he got blown up by Baron Zemo.
Now that you've listened to the podcast, head to the forum section of AroundComics.com to post your thoughts on the show and talk with other comic fans from around the globe.
We're going to move into some forum questions. We've had the interview posted on the forum for the last week or so and had a lot of questions posted. And the first question was, along with the announcement of the delay of Civil War, Marvel snuck in an announcement for a Cap Winter Soldier Civil War one-shot. Is Brew going to be involved with this? And this question is from Scott Cederland here in Chicago. So I guess that's a yes.
Yeah, I'm writing it. I pitched it. It was something that I'd been talking to Tom about for a while before we ended up pitching it as, you know, as something to do in December because, you know, because of the Civil War delay, we have to delay Cap a little bit because Cap 25, which is, you know, a double-sized issue that's like special, you know, 25th anniversary or 25th issue thing, comes, it takes place about a half an hour after the final issue of Civil War, and it's the sort of explosive lead into the next year of Cap, actually. So we had to delay that until Civil War is over, and so I said, well, okay, well then let's do something else Cap related, you know, for December then, and, you know, and let's do that Winter Soldier project that, you know, we've kicked around, and, you know, let's get someone really great to draw it, and, you know, it'll be great. We'll do this issue that's just, you know, the Winter Soldier at Christmas, because what a terrible time for a guy like that, especially during the Civil War. You know, you're alienated from everyone you know just about, or everyone, and the people that you've ever cared about in your life are all either dead or in the midst of Civil War, you know? Mm-hmm. So I thought it'd be a really interesting, you know, and apt, like, winter special, actually.
Well, after you did, after that one, I think it was the annual?
The annual, yeah.
That you did in the story with Bucky and...
65th anniversary.
The 65th anniversary. That was just some amazing writing. I just loved that story, and to flesh out that character that we saw, you know, that we really have never seen much about Bucky other than the fact that he died. And to see you go back and you know, bring him back, but not only that, see how you flesh that character out and his history has just been, you know, great to watch as a fan.
Yeah. He stars in Cap 23 as well. It shows what he's sort of doing during the early days of the Civil War and what he does. Cap 21 comes out in a few days. Or a few weeks, I should say, and he's in that, you know, at the end of that, you sort of see where it looks like he's going to be going. I don't want to ruin it for anybody, but Cap, you know, the couple of issues later, in the Civil War tie-ins, he stars in an issue, and you see sort of, you know, what side he's on, I guess, and where he falls in this whole thing, and who he's dealing with, and sort of, you know, I don't want to reel too much about it, but it's pretty kick-ass.
Nice. Well, at some point, we're going to have you back on just to talk about Captain America, because that's a whole other subject. But we have a bunch of more questions from our forum members.
Let's rattle through them.
All right, the next one is from Matt Fraction in Missouri. He said, Ed, what do you hate more, Iron Fist short pants and Kung Fu booties lower half, or his Spawn collar and Little Stevie head wrap upper half? And why?
Definitely the booties. I think I've addressed this
earlier. Yeah. you got to
I like the mask. And even the collar, though, it goes up way too high. We're fixing that. I don't want to lose the look of the collar, but I also, it's like the Batman movie. The only complaint I have about Batman Begins is that Batman should be able to turn his head in a fight. You know, like, they should be able to figure out a way to make a Batman costume where the neck can work. But you know, that's my only complaint with Iron Fist collar. Is it really doesn't make sense to have a collar that cuts off all peripheral vision when you're a kung fu master.
Yeah. Well, Matt was nice enough to send us that question via email.
And so. He's like, make sure and ask him that. He'll love it.
All right, our
what
next
a
one.
Jerk.
Matt, we
you
love
know, his wife
Matt.
Wife dyes her hair. It's not really red.
Don't you dare talk about Kelly Sue that way. We've had to defend Kelly Sue
don't
on a couple
that.
Of. Oh, jeez.
Oh, you're going to bring the ire of the image boards down on ye.
Yeah.
All right, this is from Equinox.
I'm just trying to steal her from him to join my family. So.
Oh. Kelly Sue is wonderful. We love
yeah.
her. While he probably came in with a certain perspective to Daredevil, after working with Bendis on a seamless transition, how does he approach coming into a new title with established characters? For example, did he come into the X-Men hoping to set up a new world order, or just to build on what had come before?
A little bit of both, really. I mean, you never want to just... I think that's been the problem with a lot of you know, mainstream stuff, is that if you go in too reverential and you don't want to change the deck chairs around on the Titanic a little bit, then you know you're just gonna do stuff that people don't remember later. You have to. One of the beauties of the X-Men in the early days was that the status quo was constantly changing, and it was. I think that's one of the reasons that book succeeded more than the other Marvel books at the time. It, you know, yes, it was. You know, using those characters in a completely different way, and it was the first real sort of modern soap opera comic. But also, you just never knew what was going to happen in that book. It was crazy, you know. I mean, you know, Phoenix dies and Cyclops quits, and, you know, you're just, you know, when I was 13 or 14 years old when that came out, that blew me away, you know, and I think that you have to do stuff like that. You have to shake things up, and you have to change the status quo in these books, because otherwise you're just, you know, doing stories that are just marking time. So, you know, but to do it right, you build on what's come before, and, you know, you can touch on these classic stories, but you don't have to leave it the same as you found it necessarily, as long as, you know, anything that you've changed should, my feeling is, you know, it's the same with bringing back Bucky, kind of. Like, does bringing back Bucky change anything fundamental about what makes Captain America Captain America? And if it changes that, which, you know, it changes, yes, okay, the tragedy of Bucky didn't, you know, now Bucky didn't die, and that's changed. But if there's still, just as great of, like, a moral tragedy for Captain America that is then replaced by that, and there is, with the Winter Soldier story. That's why I felt like it was okay to do that. But with, with this whole Shi'ar story, you know, the way I pitched it, you know, I wanted to do a Shi'ar story that reminded people of those first early Shi'ar stories when the Shi'ar were crazy and scary, and, you know, they were trying to kill Lilandra, and then they were trying to kill Phoenix, and, you know, it's like they were something that you were excited when there was a story with them in it, not like, you know, oh, great, another Shi'ar story that's not going to matter and that's just going to have the X-Men in it. And so, you know, for me it was like, I want to do a Shi'ar story where by the end of it people are like, oh my God, I can't wait till they do another Shi'ar story. You know? So that's been the plan all along, was to sort of lay that foundation and then really, you know, really screw with it and really mess it up and leave the Shi'ar in a place that you've never seen them before.
Featherless?
Huh? Featherless? No, not that place.
Okay.
Next one is
so
from...
I'll be wearing capri pants and ballet shoes. Becomes the new Imperial outfit.
This next one is from John Sokol. He said, at one point when Dead Enders was canceled, you had posted on the Warren Ellis forum that you were very down on Wait for the Trade camp. What is your feeling about Trade waiting now?
Well, I, you know, I'm conflicted about it, because there are books where I wait for the trade, and I always feel a little bit bad, though, when I do that, because I guess I make a distinction. If you're a comic book fan right now, it's unfortunate that you can't be just a casual fan if you're a fan of stuff outside of Marvel and DC. If you're a fan of Marvel and DC, you can be a casual fan. You know, you can just buy the books that you want to buy on a monthly basis, and you can safely assume that most of the stuff is going to get collected. And if you feel like not reading, you know, Teen Titans and you want to wait for the trade paperback, I just grabbed that one out of the air just because I saw a copy of Teen Titans. But if you want to wait for the trades on those, you know, Teen Titans is not going to get canceled. But if you want books like Fell and Casanova and Criminal and Powers and any of the, you know, Vertigo books that do under 20,000, if you want any of those books to keep going, you got to actually buy the comics and buy the trades if you want the trade for your bookshelf. You know, the trade is the ultimate goal of a lot of those books. You know, well, in Casanova, the monthly is actually, you know, serving its own purpose there. But, you know, for a lot of the Vertigo stuff and a lot of the Wildstorm stuff and a lot of the Marvel stuff, a lot of stuff now, the trade is, you know, is the final product that's going to exist. And as long as the comic sales subsist enough to put those trades out, everyone's happy. But, you know, books at Image that are barely scraping by, you know, if you want them to last more than one trade, you got to buy the comic. It's unfortunate. You know, it's too bad. You've got to vote with your wallet on that one. And I always feel bad when I see people who are, like, buying every Marvel and DC comic that comes out telling me they can't afford to buy, you know, Casanova or Fell. It's $2.
Yeah.
You know, and if you don't buy the book and you want that kind of, you know, like, I'll wait for the trade for that. And it's like, you'll wait for the trade for the marginal stuff that we're lucky even gets to store shelves, you know, but you'll buy every version of, you know, of New Avengers covers and, you know, all the variants for Civil War, you know, and it's like, come on, you know, like, not to diss that stuff or say stop buying Marvel Comics in any way, shape, or form, but, you know, but
no,
if you want that other stuff to exist, you know, unfortunately it's not popular enough and it's not successful enough that it doesn't need the people who actually want that kind of comic to buy it.
Well, yeah, I mean,
you know, so I'm very conflicted. Like, I feel like as a customer, people should just be able to wait for the trades, you know, but unfortunately, you know, the best case scenario is you just didn't know about a book. Like, I literally hear from a dozen people a day or so now who are just discovering Sleeper, and they're so happy that they can buy 4 trade paperbacks all in one fell swoop and read the whole thing in once. You know, and that's great. And I don't feel bad for them that they never supported the book before, or mad at them that they never supported the book before because they never heard of it. You know, but if you've actually heard of, like, a book that sounds like something that you're interested in and you decide to wait for the trade, you're pretty much saying, I hope this book gets canceled.
Right.
You know,
hey, you know,
and that's just the sad reality of the marketplace.
Talking
you
about...
know, if you're going to wait for the trade on, you know, wait for the trade on All-Star Superman or All-Star Batman.
Something that's not
going to
get canceled. Sure.
Wait for the trade on DC Comics.
Ah, there it is. Boom.
Since I don't work for them.
Wait for the trade on Gotham Central, because those came out so frequently.
Yeah, well, people who waited for the trade on Gotham Central had to wait 2 years for the first trade. We were, you know, the book was practically done by the time they put... I mean, the second trade came out, and the book was, you know, that storyline that was in the second trade had won the Eisner Award the year before that, you know, and it still didn't come out in trade paperback for another year. So, yeah, sometimes you have to wait a long time for a trade. By the time the third Gotham Central trade came out, the book was over, you know.
Yeah,
I feel bad about it because I know eventually the market is going to shift more that way, but I think the waiting for the trade crowd needs to realize that sometimes when you wait for the trade, you're guaranteeing that there will only be one trade for you know, a book.
It's certainly a double.
You know, any book that's selling under 20,000, there's no guarantee that book is going to continue ever. You know, so unless a book is selling over 20,000, waiting for the trade, you know, you're voting against that book's survival, unfortunately, and that's just a fact. You know, and. You hear me, Goddard, or whatever your name is?
Goddard from
Goddard.
The Bendis board.
You hear me, all those people on Bendis board who say they're going to wait for the trade. Bruno Batista, wherever you are out there, who's already waiting for the trade for Criminal. If you don't want to keep the comics, buy the comic and give it away to someone else.
I tell you what, I've started...
Give it away to charity and write it off on your taxes, you know, and then buy the trade when it comes out.
I've started this with my comic shop here. I buy a lot of the single issues, but I love trades because they're collected and I can let people buy them.
I keep almost no comics. I give away almost every issue of every comic that I buy or that I get for free. I keep the trade paperbacks that I want, you know, and I'll loan those out to people if I want to, you know. My best friend's wife loves Powers because one day when she was pregnant, she just came over looking for some stuff to read, and she flipped through a copy of Powers and loved Oeming's art, and she's like, "Do you have any trade paperbacks of this?" And I gave her like 9 trade paperbacks, and now it's her favorite comic. Every time I see her, she's asking me if Brian Michael Bendis has been to visit.
Be sure to stay inside and listen to AroundComics.com, especially during daylight hours. Seriously, it's spring, and the glint off your pasty white comic geek skin could blind someone.
Hey, is there any, you know, it reminded me about something else. You were on the Authority for a while. Are we going to see any more Authority from you, or is that...
No, you know, with the Authority, it seems like bad luck to do more than 12 issues.
Yeah, it does seem to have a curse to it, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's... You know, I did the same amount that Warren did. that's enough.
Okay, I gotcha.
Well, hey, I wanna talking about trades, and I think this may go.
Sorry, my dog is barking. Hold on.
Yeah. It's this killer
the
chihuahua.
There's no one there. There's no one there. I have the tiniest, ferocious dog in the world.
Okay, what's its name?
Okay, so next question.
Yeah, what's your dog's name?
Oh, my dog's name is Watson.
Well, of course.
He's a miniature wire-haired dachshund. You can look at a picture of him wearing a tiny sweater on my MySpace page.
I didn't even know you had a MySpace page. Is it MySpace.com?
I had him as my profile picture for a while because I was trying to get a lot of young girls.
Nice. That's what's
my
dog.
Put me on his top friends list, and I'm like, oh, I better put up a cute picture instead of a picture of this creepy old guy in a hat.
How long have you had that hat?
I got that hat about a year and a half ago. I had another hat before that, but I got that one at Mrs. Deuson's in San Francisco because I was down there for a wedding and I was buying a hat for that. And she said, "Where do you live?" And I said, "Seattle." And she said, "Oh, well, you have to get a rain hat." And so it's kind of an Indiana Jones style hat in a way, but it's gray.
Yeah, we remember it from last year. We saw you at Wizard World. Hey, why weren't you at Wizard World this year?
Yeah, what's up with that?
Chicago.
Didn't
sorry.
Go.
We missed you so much.
I'm going to Wizard
year.
World, Texas.
Texas?
That's not Chicago.
Yeah.
That's Texas.
I wanted to go to more conventions after Criminal came out instead of beforehand because I wanted to actually, you know, it's so hard to travel when you work for yourself because you never get days off. Like, I you know, every time I have to take a trip, it's, you know, for a convention, I have to get more work done before I leave and catch up after I get back.
Well,
so.
It's not like you're working on 5 books right now.
Yeah, exactly. and it's not like I'm behind on, like, half of them most of the time.
Don't say that.
We'll edit that out. Are you going to make it to Chicago next year and bring your partner in crime, Mike Lark, with you?
I might. I don't know. It's all up in the air. I'm trying to... the next year of my life is basically all about trying to get farther ahead on everything that I'm working on so that I can actually spend more time with my family because they're getting a little bit sick of me working 7 days a week around here.
Yeah.
But
as much as we like it, we understand their position. So.
I've got a lot of trips planned for the last part of the year where I'm going to, you know, two conventions, and, you know, one in October and one in November, and we've got, like, a signing down in Tacoma, and I've got to do some traveling for family stuff, because my mom's husband of 20 years died earlier this year, and so it's been kind of a rough year for the family, but you know, I would have loved to have gone to Chicago. They just, you know, it just was bad timing. I had just gone to San Diego right before that, and those conventions really need to be about a month apart.
Yeah,
yes, they do. I want Chicago
too close together.
Yeah, I want Chicago to flip with Philadelphia in the Wizard World and have ours a little bit earlier in the year for that reason.
Yeah, but then that's right around the time of the Emerald City show, which is becoming a pretty good show.
That's what we've heard.
It's already a good show, but it's becoming like a much more higher attended one, I think.
Well, it's all you writers are living in the Pacific Northwest now.
Yeah, so we love the Emerald City show because I don't actually have to go anywhere. It's like I actually have people come over here.
Crashing at Ed's place. Uh-huh. Hey, you know, we met you last year at Wizard World. We were lucky enough to spend a little time with you last year, hang out and talk to you, and you were just being announced as the writer of Daredevil, and I think Cap came out just before
that.
Cap was
about, like, issue 4 or
something.
Yeah.
What's life
like? You guys are probably still even speak to you now that it's a year later.
We're shocked. What has the last year been like for Ed Brubaker? I think that's where Sal was.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been a hell. I think
Ed Brubaker's just trying to figure out who Ed Brubaker is.
So, Ed. No,
being my old sports thing.
I remember this conversation. We were walking down a hallway at the Hyatt there, and I looked at you and I was like, dude, this is your coming out party. This, you know, at that convention. And you looked at me, it's like, yeah, whatever. And I'm like,
who are you again?
Yeah.
I think is what he said.
Yeah.
But,
but man, it's been an awesome year. What's it been like for you?
It's been a little weird. Honestly, I got an email like a couple months ago from, you know, one of the vice presidents at Marvel, you know, who was telling me that Cap and Daredevil were going up in sales like a couple thousand a month, and that, you know, while neither of them are in the top 10, you know, that's against the trend, and that's like a really big deal. There's very few books that consistently, you know, go up for, you know, months at a time, and, you know, we're going up. You know, on Daredevil, there's no Civil War crossover, and on Cap, we've been moving up the sales charts even before we get to the Civil War tie-in stuff. So that's been kind of crazy. And then what's really bizarre to me is that I get emails every day from people who, you know, I thought, you know, Cap and the X-Men, I probably reached as many people as are ever going to buy any comic by me. But just when Daredevil came out, it was like, you know, Daredevil and Cap sell almost the same amount of copies, but apparently to almost entirely different audiences.
Sure.
You know, like there's probably like a 20% crossover between those two audiences. And I was shocked. There were people, you know, who never heard of me before. And I get emails every day. Like now issue 6, because of all the, you know, the Iron Fist stuff and all the PR that went around with the Civil War Director's Cut, and like, you know, thousands and thousands of people read about that online. You know, and picked up that issue of Daredevil, and now there's a bunch of more people picking up Daredevil, you know, that are searching out all the back issues and not having any luck finding them. And, you know, it's really weird. It does, and my life doesn't feel that different than before, except, you know, my website gets like, you know, 100 times the hits that it used to. So it's kind of weird. Every now and then I have like a bizarre moment that happens. I was with my oldest friend in the world is a guy I've known for like 23 years, and I just happened to run into him at San Diego. He works in video games now, but he used to be an inker in comics in the late 80s and early 90s. He worked at Malibu and Marvel, and, you know, now he does 3D animation for like The Sims and the Harry Potter games and stuff like that. And we were just walking along the street in San Diego after the show, like Saturday night, and we ran into these kids on the street who just, you know, they had their badges on, and they just looked like, you know, like punk rock kids or something. And I had some criminal promos like in my bag, and I said, "Oh, hey guys, hold on a second, let me give you the promo for my new comic." And I gave them these criminal, you know, trailers, and the guy looked at me, and he's like, "Where did you get these?" And I said, "Oh, I had them printed up." And he's like, "Do you know Ed Brubaker?" And my friend started cracking up, and I was like, "Yeah, I am Ed Brubaker," and they wouldn't believe me.
No way.
And I had to like take out my ID and stuff, and they really were. The guy's like, "Wow, because if you really are Ed Brubaker, I mean, I'm a huge fan of Ed Brubaker." And my friend Mike was just cracking up. He was like, I can't believe that. That's the weirdest thing I've ever seen." And I was like, "Yeah, I mean, I'm not like famous by the wildest stretch of the imagination. I mean, I'm never going to get recognized outside of a comic convention or a comic book store, thank God. But you know.
But you have a certain amount of.
It definitely feels different. And Bendis told me, you know, when you do like a big thing like Deadly Genesis or Takeover Uncanny or even Daredevil, it's like a huge deal to be given Daredevil. You know, I mean, look at everybody who's written it before.
Mm-hmm. A couple paltry names.
A couple of hacks.
Yeah, a couple of paltry names like Frank Miller and Kevin Smith and Brian Bendis.
Who?
Yeah, nobody successful at all has ever worked on that book. It's a great gig to get that when you're going to try and launch a crime book too, because, you know, when you do Daredevil right and everybody likes it, you're almost given permission to go off and do a crime comic after that.
Yeah, and well, I think the biggest thing now is just don't make the mistake of like trying to create a huge crossover event and and get and
yeah.
control that. You know, I think, you know, Bendis, I was a longtime fan of his work for, you know,
and still am.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But it just got to the point where I think he was doing too much, and you know, he was trying to tell so many stories that at some point I think you just get so thinned out on that stuff that the quality is hard to maintain.
Whenever Iron Fist was announced,
I think with any writer who's really productive, there's going to be, you know, ebbs and flows to the stuff that, you know, you like or don't like about their output. I mean, I think Brian's last two issues of Avengers that are the Civil War tie-ins are like actually the best issues of Avengers he's ever done.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, Powers is as good now as it's ever been.
I agree completely.
So I think, you know, mm-hmm. Brian's still firing on all cylinders. He's just doing different kinds. He's doing a lot of different kinds of stuff that people never expected him to do. And, you know, when you're hitting, you know, a couple hundred thousand readers with your stuff, you know, not all of them are ever going to like it. I mean,
sure.
I always felt when I was a kid I was lucky if 6 out of 12 issues of a comic were good, actually.
Yeah, that's...
You know?
Yeah.
Of course, they would have fill-ins and like, you know, guest writers constantly and without any announcement whatsoever back then.
Let alone 100 issues of Spider-Man, Ultimate
sure.
Spider-Man that have all been pretty darn good.
I think his stuff is really, you know, as good as it's ever been. You know, we get worried about you because you're doing so many books, and we care about you, Ed.
You know, but
I wouldn't be doing it if I was worried. I've been doing 3 to 5 books a month for 5 years now. It's just, you know, until I got to Marvel, nobody, you know, realized that I was doing stuff at Vertigo, at DC, and at Wildstorm
right.
all at the same time. I mean, the first year I was doing Cap, I had like, you know, 2 books coming out of Wildstorm for part of that. You know, I had the tail end of Sleeper and I had, you know, the whole Authority.
I just found out you were doing...
And, you know, so I've always been doing, you know, more than, like, you know, 3 books a month is my minimum, really. So right now I'm doing about 4 books a month.
Nice.
And, you know, that's not that bad, really. You know, some months it's easier than others, but I like it because it makes me feel like a pulp writer, you know, like I have to get up every week and write something, so you keep those muscles moving, you know, but also, you know, it's good to have a bunch of different kinds of things to work on because it keeps your brain fresh.
Well, you've got noir, you've got a couple solo books, you've got, you know, a superhero team book that's in outer space. So, I mean, it's enough
yeah.
to definitely pull on a lot of your different creative juices, which is
yeah.
nice to
and within
see.
Those books, I try to do, you know, little bits and pieces of other genres, you know, like I'll try to, with Catwoman, I did a whole storyline in there that was pretty much just like a tragic romance comic. And, you know, Dead Enders was pretty much like a sci-fi romance comic. I try to get a lot of different stuff into the stuff I'm already doing. But, you know, I realize there's a bit of a dark tone around everything that I do.
Well, it's because you live in the Pacific Northwest and it's always rainy.
You wish. It's like 95 degrees here today.
Nice. I was going to ask you...
So we got any more questions from the website?
We've got... one more, maybe two more. Dan in Minnesota, this is Paper Cut. He says, what was the attraction to come over to Marvel after the long stint with DC? The characters, the creators at Marvel, or just a new territory to conquer, or Joe Quesada's back rubs?
Joe Quesada's back rubs. Man jobs, man. No, I hope Joe doesn't listen to that.
Don't worry.
He'll cut it out.
Yeah, don't worry.
No, really, it was just I wanted to go freelance. I was, you know, I'd been on exclusives for a long time, and I just felt like I was in this position where I wanted to try to branch out, and, you know, I'd worked on a lot of stuff at DC and Wildstorm, and I didn't want to necessarily leave, especially Wildstorm, I didn't want to leave. But, you know, I was going off the exclusive, and... You know, they offered me Captain America, which was my favorite comic as a little kid. And, you know, I realized when I started working on it that I never, when I started writing comics for other people to draw, had any intention of ever doing superhero stuff. It was just because of Scene of the Crime that I ended up getting, you know, offers to work in the Batman office. And, you know, Shrek had been an editor of some of my early stuff at Dark Horse. And so, you know, once he got in there, then, you know, those doors opened even wider. And, you know, it was only when I started working at Marvel that I actually remembered what I'd loved about the medium growing up, like the superhero genre, really, because I was a Marvel kid. I was not a DC kid. I mean, I had, you know, issues of Batman, and I had, you know, there were certain DC comics that I followed, but with Marvel, I was like a line-wide kind of, you know, in the 70s, I bought pretty much every comic Marvel put out, at least for a few issues, and, you know, I was, you know, a Marvel zombie, basically, and so when I started working on Captain America and, you know, planning out stuff for Daredevil, I just realized how much of that stuff was just, you know, in my DNA,
ingrained,
basically.
Yeah, ingrained.
And I had a talk with Ralph Macchio when I was out there a couple months ago about that, and he thought it was so shocking how easily I fell into an understanding of the way things worked at Marvel. And, you know, usually they have to sort of guide people through it, and for me, they really don't have to give me any notes, because I just, you know, especially the characters that I'm working on, like Cap and Daredevil, I know them like the back of my hand.
Are you ever going to look at doing some prose? You ever thought about doing a crime novel? I mean, you seem perfectly suited for it.
I've worked on some stuff. I haven't ever finished a novel, and you know, at some point I'd like to write a crime novel. I have outlines for about 5 different ones that I couldn't see being anything but novels.
Sure.
But, you know, it's fitting it in around everything else. Has always been the problem. I got 160 pages into a detective novel once, and I had to set it aside because I was getting so far behind on all the writing stuff that I get paid to do.
Sure.
And when I set it aside for long enough, when I came back to it, it was really hard to try to get into it again. But I think I'm much more naturally a comic book writer just because I grew up writing and drawing my own comics. So I like. There's certain things you can do in comics that you can't do in any other medium, and one of those is juxtaposing, you know, images and narration, where you can have a scene taking place and a narration that's going over it that has nothing to do with the images that you're seeing, or at least is not, you know, it's not something you could do in a book. You couldn't have a narration and then descriptions of pictures that are taking place that are meant to be seen together. You know, like the opening scene in Criminal Number One actually is like a 5-page scene that has no dialogue and has all narration, but it's a robbery that's going bad, and the narration doesn't actually talk about that at all. The narration is about the main character's philosophy, and these two images are juxtaposed, and, you know, for effect, basically, and that's not something I could ever figure out how to do in a book. I mean, you could do it in a movie, but it's much better in comics because everything's frozen on the page. So you can look at each, you know, you can really read it and look at the pictures and really, you know, go back over it, kind of.
Can't wait until the next podcast? Be sure to check out AroundComics.com for breaking news, reviews, and opinions.
All right, well, Ed, that everything just fantastic today. We really appreciate you being on the show with us. You're one of our favorite writers, and we look forward to your, you know, various works every month. A quick rundown, everything that's going on in the Ed Brubaker universe right now.
A quick rundown of the universe. Well, go check out my MySpace page. I'm going to be like a total whore and plug my MySpace page.
That's why you're here.
Some friends of mine put together a really funny video that just got up there this afternoon that I think is pretty silly. But and offensively goofy, but I like it. It's got that sort of a Benny Hill style of humor. But what else have I got? I've got I'm doing Daredevil, Captain America, Uncanny X-Men. I'll have new issues coming out in the next couple of weeks, and with, you know, great art by great artists. I don't know. I'm terrible at these rundowns.
I just like
Criminal, and everybody that listens to this, call up their retailer and make sure they're ordering Criminal.
Order Criminal,
and then wait 5 minutes and call them up with, like, you know, some sort of cloth over the phone and pretend to be a different person asking about Criminal, and then, like, do that again the next day and do that for like 5 or 6 days in a row, and maybe even, like, find hot girls on the street and get them to call up with their cell phone and ask, like,
wait, these are comic book fans, man. Yeah, they're not hanging out with hot girls.
I really want the grassroots movement to go out and just do crazy stuff. Like, actually, you know, do that. Like, go out on the street and give a girl a dollar to go into the comic book store and ask about Criminal if she's really hot.
See,
or even if she's not. It doesn't matter, actually. That was really sexist. It's any woman. As long as it's not your grandmother, because that would just be kind of weird. Really, as long as they're over 16 and under, say, 65, get them into a comic store to ask about Criminal just for me. And send me a picture.
So you're wanting people to push Criminal.
More than anything, just, you know, I really, you know, I appreciate how much everybody's loving all my other stuff, and I'm not slighting any of that stuff at all, and I appreciate that, you know, Marvel is being so supportive of me doing Criminal and doing everything else, that they're actually letting me plug Criminal in the letters pages of Cap and Daredevil, which is, you know, not something that, you know, usually happens with creator-owned books when you're working for the man. You know, and that's something that I can thank Bendis for, because Bendis is like, well, if you let us push this stuff in our other books, everyone makes more money.
Well, I tell you what, Ed, is Criminal going to be good?
Criminal is going to be criminally, you know, underrated.
Well, no, is it going to be? Is it going to be good?
I don't know. Warren Ellis is the first person to have read the first issue, like I said, and he said it was fucking great.
Okay.
And he reiterated it twice.
Well,
I'm trying to figure out how I can use that on the front cover, but I don't think
effing
F asterisk colon. Yeah. All right. Well,
it's bloody good. You can just do that. Just like, you know.
Yeah. Well, you've sold copies on our cast and in the store, and we're going to support the crap out of it. We, you know, Sal and I both loved your work with Sleeper, love Sean's work, and, you know, we're going to support it.
I gotta say, whenever anyone's talking to retailers, I cringe every time someone, it's like, I love Sleeper, and I so love my Sleeper fan base, and I know that they're going to come out for whatever Sean and I do next, but I really, it's like, I fear, I don't want retailers being reminded of Sleeper when we're pitching Criminal. I want them to be reminded of Marvel Zombies and Daredevil. I want them to be reminded of books by us that fly off the shelves.
Sure.
I don't want them to be reminded of, oh, did I order that? I don't think I ever ordered any of those. You know, or, oh, that's that book that really was really irritating because people were always asking about it and I didn't have it in stock.
Yeah.
You know, like, I want them, it's like, I love, you know, we're going to push Sleeper in Criminal, and we're going to, you know, we're going to continue to sell that back stock, and we're really proud of it. But I don't want people to be pointing out, you know, they're the guys who did Sleeper, because nobody bought Sleeper.
Yeah.
You know?
I bought it, and it was awesome.
You guys bought it.
Yeah,
everybody great bought Sleeper, and all the retailers who bought Sleeper are the guys who are going to be really pushing Criminal. And, you know, the fan base that we built with Sleeper, you know, and the trades have now sold more than the comics did. So clearly,
God,
there's people out there who've bought those things. But, you know, I want those retailers who didn't buy Sleeper in the first place. I want all the retailers and fans who are just getting turned on to my stuff, because, you know, if I get everybody who bought Sleeper to be following Criminal and can get, you know, even 10% to 20% of these new people who've been reading my stuff, then, you know, we can do Criminal for the rest of our lives.
Sure.
You know, so.
Well, we're going to certainly push the book. I mean, we, you know, there's no question. I'm sure we will.
It's going to be good. If
yeah,
it's good,
it's
we'll push
be,
it.
Yeah,
there's no question.
It'll be halfway decent.
Yeah.
It'll be.
It's not good art.
Well,
that's
Ed.
For sure. And it's in color.
Yeah, ooh. Well, there you go.
Nice. Ed, it has been so fantastic talking with you. We would love to have you back on the show anytime that you want to talk about any of your works or just talk about comics. So,
all right.
Best of
well,
luck
sure, guys.
With Criminal. And,
all right, well, I'm going to hang up now because I got stuff to do.
All right, Ed.
Thank you very much, Ed.
Thanks, buddy.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, there's Ed Brubaker for you. Heck of a guy. Hell of a writer. If you haven't checked out his stuff before, I really highly recommend you do so. Sleeper, fantastic work. It's basically a espionage, superhero, noir, crime, awesome story. Daredevil, just amazing. Captain America, if you've ever been a fan of Cap, you will absolutely love what Ed is doing on Captain America. And I also can say Criminal is something you should order. I happen to get my hands on a preview copy of it. I'll be writing a review probably early next week on that, but I have read it, and it's just great stuff, and I can't recommend it enough. You should go out today and order it and call your LCS and all that other stuff and try and get your friends to order it, and it's really, really good, and I'd hate for this book not to be around for a long time. So anyway, that was Ed Brubaker. Hope you had fun. Next week, I know Chris and Tom will be putting together something special for you guys. I will not be on the show, but they will be. And then after that, we have a bunch of shows lined up for you, a bunch of great stuff in store for all of you. I know we have some big names coming on the show. We have some small names coming on the show. We have some no names coming on the show that hopefully we can tune you into some people maybe you've never heard of before. And otherwise, it'll be the same old nonsense of me, Chris, and Tom sitting around and talking about comics. So I hope you have enjoyed this. Remember to come on www.aroundcomics.com. You can check out our forum there. You can send us emails if you like at info@aroundcomics.com. You can leave us a voicemail at 1-888-65-GCAST. Plenty of ways to get a hold of us. We'd love to hear from you. That's going to do it for me. I hope you had fun. You will hear a new show next Monday. And in the meantime, we will be everywhere in and around comics. If you would like to suggest a topic, send us your comments, or are interested in becoming a panel member, email us at info@aroundcomics.com or visit the Contact Us section of our website. For that and the latest in comics news and opinions, go to www.aroundcomics.com. Music for this show provided by the Podshow Podsafe Music Network, music.podshow.com. Thank you for listening today, and remember to join us next week, where the panel will change, but our mission stays the same, bringing you the best in discussion, news, and reviews in and around comics.